Okay, so back from our commercial break. So nice to see everybody again today on Tuesday. And yeah, so today was the regular crew, nobody new. And so we tried doing a little bit more of a kind of freestyle meditation, kind of one without explicit guided instructions. And actually, in the monasteries, this is basically all you do. If you want to, you can go up and ask the teacher for instructions, but most of the time, if it's a group meditation, it's always silent. And then on the days when people come to the monastery, then they'll usually give a guided one, just in case there's new people. And there's usually a kind of a reason for this, and that is that the teachers are kind of like, actually, there's a story. I remember when I was young, actually, my mother was kind of teaching me how to ride a bike, and I remember being like really frustrated about learning how to ride this bike because you'd see the other kids and they'd be bouncing on this bike and you'd be like, how are they doing this? This is, kind of like impossible, They're on the bike and then, you're on the bike and you're kind of tipping this way and that. And then finally you get to the stage where you're kind of balancing, And you get your training wheels off and all that kind of stuff and you're able to ride around a bit. And your mother or your parents or older brother or whoever's teaching you how to ride your bike is usually there with you for a bit. But then the day comes when you have to kind of ride out on your own. And so I actually have this kind of very vivid memory in the place where I used to live as this kind of a co-op houses, and it's kind of this big kind of houses kind of ring it in like a horseshoe shape like this. And then there's this hill that goes down. And I have this memory of this hill just being gigantic, like this huge gigantic hill. And actually I went back there recently. That hill is pretty big. But anyways, I still have this very vivid memory of kind of getting on my bike and I was thinking, I'm gonna go down this hill, And I was about to go down, and I saw my mother standing at the door, and I was like, she's gonna stop me, Kind of, thinking, okay, whatever. But she just kind of stood there, and then I was terrified. I was like, ah, going down the hill, but, eventually made it down the hill. That was kind of a very vivid memory, as I made it down the hill without falling and breaking any arms, and, and then I was an independent bike rider after that. Kind of later on, I went down the same hill and hit the curb and kind of went over the handlebars or something, but that time was good. And so the point to this is that, when people are teaching us a skill, when we're learning a skill, there's an ideal for the person who's teaching us. And that ideal is that hopefully one day, the people that they're teaching, the students that they're teaching, will be able to stand on their own, will become kind of independent of the person who's teaching them. Will learn that skill and be able to internalize it to the point where to the point where they don't necessarily need the teacher's instructions to develop their skill anymore. And so in the same way, when monks are at a monastery, when they first go to a monastery, usually you require kind of like a teacher, to train you in all these different things. Kind of in your meditation, you can go and ask them questions a lot, all these different things. But later on, as you stay there for a while, they kind of want you to try to figure things out on your own. Okay? Because the thing is, when you leave the monastery, the day comes after you've reached your 5 years or you're in various encounters that you actually won't be with your teacher. They're not going to be around for you to say, what do I do? Right? They won't be around, They won't be around when there's lay people around all the time. They won't be around to interact with them. So you can just hide behind them and be like, okay, what do you do? When there's problems at the monastery or temple, they won't be around necessarily. So you can say, okay, go ask the abbot. The day comes, if you stay at a temple or a monastery long enough, then eventually people start looking at you. Like, what do you do? What do I do? Right? And so the ideal of the senior monk, what they want is for their students to one day gain the ability to kind of stand on their own and become independent of the teacher in their teaching. And in the same way, it's a similar thing, teaching and meditation. Actually, this teaching and meditation, we, you know, sometimes nowadays there's this kind of all these different words that get used for kind of meditation, kind of like mindfulness and, you know, stress, you know, stress relief and, you know, different words, you know, sati. And then you've got what people call vipassana meditation. You got samatha meditation, all these different things. But the Pali word for it is actually bhavana, kind of a bhavana, just means developing. It's kind of we're actually trying to develop various wholesome qualities in our minds for the sake of countering unwholesome ones. And the idea behind that is mainly that unwholesome qualities in our minds cause us to be unhappy. It's kind of, we go with them, you know, kind of these kind of things that are unwholesome that arise in our minds, things outside of us that we can grab onto that are unwholesome. We launching out to those things, if we eat them up, if we grab onto them, we become people who become habitually drawn to them, then we become unhappy, you know. So actually the purpose of meditation, the purpose of a meditation class isn't just to learn a meditation technique. It isn't just to necessarily learn to sit here and just watch your breath, although that is kind of what we do, right? But it has a larger purpose. So when the teachers teach us about meditation, you know, actually I myself don't necessarily consider myself to be, you know, like a meditation teacher, kind of instructor here at the class, but when you when we have these senior teachers teaching us about meditation, their hope for us is actually that we become skilled in our own minds. You know? They become happy when they see us, you know, in a situation that used to make us fly off the handle and get angry. You know? A situation that used to throw us off and we no longer get thrown off. You know, they see us in that situation, they see us skillfully deal with it, then they start to get the feeling like this is a person learning to balance the bicycle on their own. Yeah. This is a person who, you know, maybe will be able to remove the training wheels. So there's kind of interesting stories about this very famous teacher named Ajahn Chah. And his senior Western disciple was Ajahn Sumedho. And there's actually a lot of stories about Ajahn Chah kind of like kind of like doing things that seem kind of mean to to Ajahn Sumedho, you know, kind of like kind of you know, like insulting him in front of the group of people, or you know, like saying things that are really harsh to him, you know, all these various things, you know. And so there's one story where Ajahn Sumedho wanted to meditate, and all the monks were working on a road, and he said to Ajahn Chah, he's like, "Why do I have to do this work on the road? You know, I want to meditate." And then Ajahn Chah waited till later, and he said in front of everybody, you know, "Okay, everybody, we're all going to go work on the road, except for Sumedho. He can go meditate." Kind of embarrassed him, you know. But the reason what Ajahn Sumedho said was he felt very good that Ajahn Chah had the confidence in him to insult him that way in front of large groups of people. Because that's the other thing that you tend to notice, not that you're aiming to get insulted in front of large groups of people, but that if you stay with a teacher for a while and they feel like you're doing well, then they start to become more harsh towards you sometimes. You kind of let you get away with less. You kind of become more stringent. You know, things that they used to kind of let slide, they sometimes become more strict with you about. And if they do that, then you can think to yourself, well, you know, it's okay. I'm kind of, I'm doing all right, you know. It's kind of But the reason for this is because they want people to advance in their levels of skill. By the way, I won't be doing that to anybody around here, so no need to worry. Kind of start yelling at people or anything like that. That's not something I'm up to. But the reason for this is still the same thing. It's because in the same way, like if we're a small kid, you know, with our mothers, or our fathers, or our parents, and at first we're learning to play, you know, out in the yard, you know, doing these various things. At first, they kind of just let us play. And kind of, as they get older, it's like, okay, you know, time for you to learn how to handle money, and that means you have to do chores. You get paid your money if you do the chores. And so then, when they see us playing all the time, it's like, wait, you know, stop playing. You know, get in there and do your chores. And all of this is for the sake of a teacher, you know, wanting us to grow. You know, wanting us to grow in these skills, wanting us to grow in skills in our own mind. And so this is one of the reasons why they kind of poke, If you're a monk, then you're kind of there a lot, and kind of you get sometimes put in these increasingly unpleasant situations, or sometimes get yelled at in front of people. But it's because, being out in the world, when there's various things happening, the time will come when something very unpleasant happens in our life. Something very unpleasant. We lose something we care about dearly, Something terrible happens to, say, our health or our body, Something absolutely terrible happens to us. And at that time, we have to have the skills to deal with these terrible and unpleasant things that come up, which is one of the reasons why teachers poke. And so this is the other thing that comes up that's interesting when we sit quietly in meditation. It's kind of being at the meditation class, not doing the guided meditation, just being silent. What can come up a lot is physical pain. It's kind of this physical pain arising from our body sitting for long periods of time. Sometimes kind of like resentment can come up. I'm not sure if anybody felt resentment towards me. I don't get that vibe, but I remember being on some of my first meditation retreats and sitting there in just abject, like terrible pain. It was like, this is the worst pain I've ever felt in my life. What am I doing here? And just this stream of being upset that I'm there. And then your mind launches out, finds things to complain about. Like, why is it taking so long for the bell to ring? This must be longer. He's forgotten. This isn't actually the right time. It's actually 15 minutes longer than we're supposed to be, right? Kind of your mind launching out, to getting complaining about all these things in the face of physical pain. But the thing about this is that the day will come for us, sooner or later, when we have to face physical pain. And we have to face kind of mental pain. So when we sit in a kind of this way, in just a quiet way, it comes up. Pain comes up. And then we see our minds launching out to these kind of various things. So this is one of the reasons why in these kind of situations, the teacher just doesn't do anything to us. Kind of mother kind of, okay, you want to ride down the big hill, eventually you're going to have to learn to ride your bike, and you might fall and hurt yourself, but if you want to be independent, you're going to have to learn this. This is a skill you're going to have to master. So when we sit quietly like this for long periods of time, our mind launches out, there's no guidance from the teacher at the front, from the instructor at the front to say, okay, person to the far left, what you're going through right now, actually the time, it's actually the right time. It's not 15 minutes later. And okay, person on the, in the middle, okay, that pain you're feeling in your left knee right now, do exactly this and it will go away, right? Actually, all of us are each going through our own inner unique worlds during a long period of silent meditation. And during that time, we're in our own inner unique worlds. We have nothing to distract us except trying to make that inner world as good as it can be, except trying to counter whatever defilements are in there when they rise up, because there's nothing to distract us from them, right? We sit there with our eyes closed, our mind launches out. This person did this thing to me today, I've got this pain in my left knee, The time has gone on too long, something like that. These are all the exact same defilements that pull us off course when we're outside, right? It's just we don't notice them. They get covered up. And so then when we're outside, we're out in the world, somebody cuts us off in the car, and anger, flashes up, right? Or, our kids or our parents say something cruel to us and, anger flashes up, right? Kind of old memory comes up, anger flashes up, or despair flashes up, getting pulled left and right, up and down, all around. But all these things actually arise right here. They arise from within the mind. So when all the doors to our senses are closed, there's not necessarily any guided meditation instructions coming from the teacher, we're face-to-face with that. And we're face-to-face with our own minds. We're face-to-face with our own defilements. And this is the time when we learn how to balance the bike on our own. Yeah? Because ideally what we could happen to us is that we become more independent in our meditation practice. Actually, it's excellent getting together with a group, and definitely something to do. Or, you know, I personally like doing it anyways, even though I'm a monk, you know, kind of like getting together with like-minded people to meditate. But the vast majority of our life, we won't be around a bunch of people in a meditation hall meditating, right? Especially if we're not monks. You know? The vast majority of our life will be going through our day-to-day activities, and we'll be there in whatever situation we're in with our minds. And we'll be alone with our minds, regardless of where we are. So this is where these skills that we learn in sitting and watching our breath, you know, when things are quiet, when our mind's launching out, when our mind's complaining, when our mind's saying this is bad, even if our mind is elated, if our meditation goes wonderfully, if we start feeling feelings of rapture or bliss, all of these things, we learn how our mind behaves towards them. We learn what pulls it off to its center, what makes it rush out, you know? Rushing out towards happy feelings, you know. Happy feelings arise in our body, rushing out towards them, and we grab them and they slip away, you know. Happy memory comes up, rushing out to it, and we grab it, and we're right there in this happy memory, we're enjoying it, and it turns into something terrible, you know. Rushing out towards this kind of worry about what we should do in the future. It's so important right now. And we get up from our meditation seat and it seems like there's nothing going on. All these things that kind of arise in this way, they're kind of funny, right? We all go through them when we sit down to meditate. But actually, these are the exact same things that are pulling us off in our day-to-day life. These are the same things. This is a microcosm. This world inside is a microcosm of our whole life. You know, the whole way, the ebb and flow of our life, right? Running out to grab towards this really excellent thing, you know? Running out to try to escape from this really bad thing, you know? All of that is this mind of ours wavering and rushing towards back and forth. And this is why the Buddha says, you know, that he gives a simile, these kind of eight worldly winds, you know, it's kind of gain and loss, pleasure and pain, status and loss of status, and fame and anonymity. You know, kind of whole life, you know, can rush out towards the gain. Right? We get the gain, and then we suffer when it turns into loss, right? Whole life, we can run away from loss, and we feel elated when we get the gain, only to have it change. We run towards pleasure, things that make us happy, you know, run towards the burger, right? Run towards the fries, run towards the pleasant feelings that are coming up in our body, right? Pleasant feelings that arise in our meditation. And when we grab them to eat them, they disappear. Right? And so right here, if we pay close attention to what's going on inside as we practice meditation in the quiet, as we practice alone, we can learn a lot about the way that our mind operates outside. And we can also learn a lot about the principles that operate in the world. You know, the same things that happen on the small scale in our mind right here happen in a large scale in a week, happen in a large scale in a month, happen in a large scale in a year, happen in a large scale over our lifetime. So this is why just sitting here and watching our breath, learning to become skilled in this, you know, learning to become skilled when I feel a painful feeling in my leg, you know, I won't let my mind go to something unwholesome because of that. When I feel a really pleasant feeling coming up or a pleasant memory, I won't let my mind rush out towards it. All the time, I'll be here with my center, with my breath, and I'll learn to ask myself what's skillful to do, what's not skillful to do. What do I do to make my mind settle down? How do I make it keep getting that way? You know? And so when we change this on the small scale, right here with our breath, you know, right here, watching our mind in meditation, we become skilled at changing our life on the larger scale. We become skilled at implementing these patterns in a week. We become skilled at implementing them in a month. We become skilled at implementing them in a year. We become skilled at integrating them into our lifetime. You know, all these things. But ultimately, the purpose of all this is to notice the way that things change, or notice the impermanence of these things in our minds. You know? So the ultimate aim of the Buddha's teaching is to launch our minds, so our minds launch out, find a happiness that doesn't change. We see this when we meditate, you know. The happy memory is there and it's gone. The bad memory is there, and because things seem terrible in the bad memory, the next happy thing that comes up seems amazing. Over and over again like this, spun around like this, spun around. And this is what they call in Buddhism samsara. It's kind of rushing after gain until it turns to loss, escaping from loss till it turns to gain, rushing after pleasure till it turns to pain, escaping from pain till it turns to pleasure, rushing after fame until it turns to anonymity, escaping from anonymity till it turns to fame. And so the world revolves around these eight things, revolves around gain and loss, around pleasure and pain, around fame and anonymity, around status and loss of status. So when we notice these patterns in our own minds sitting here quietly, then we start to think, is there something else? Something other than this? Is there something better? And that's where our true spiritual quest begins. That's where we begin to find a refuge that goes beyond this shakiness in our mind, goes beyond this kind of, feeling the pain in our knee, getting excited when something good happens, getting sad when something bad happens. You know? We learn to find a refuge in the Dhamma, and that's a refuge that doesn't let us down. And so when we have our refuge in the Dhamma in this way, when we learn to do these things on our own, when we learn how our mind operates, when we learn to sit in quiet, when we learn to keep coming back to our breath, more and more we become like that little kid learning to balance his bike. You know, more and more we become like that little kid learning to ride down the hill. And then hopefully one day we become skilled bike riders ourselves. And then our teachers will be happy. They won't have to worry about us. And we'll be happy ourselves too. Yeah. Okay, so I think I'll leave that for your reflection.